Okay, so Lua, we're currently, the last few weeks, we've been trying to figure out how to do our open. Because we talked about this a few weeks ago, where when...
The bit continues.
Yeah, the bit continued. I was just the host, and it was solely me every single day, I would introduce the guests, and it would be much more Callahan, you know, oriented. But now that we have a, let me use your given name, Butt Fart Stardust 69.
Yes.
Now that we have one, Ian, of the comedian clan, it feels unfair to me to be the leader of all discussions. You know what I mean? Like we should share some. So what are we've been brainstorming trying to figure out how we should do our openings
for
the last few weeks. Okay.
Welcome to the Mind Sculptors, where I'm the mind and he's the sculptor. Get it?
Who's what?
I think Cal's the mind and definitely not a bimbo. And I think you're the
way you said that makes me think that you kind of think I am a bimbo.
Also, for anybody wondering, this is not my second head moving around. This is comedian MTG in the same room.
No, we don't live together.
I don't know. I think
that's not very Christian of you.
Okay, we have separate prayers and we pray every night.
Yes. I don't know. I think the two of you make a very welcoming, very gay, very
us never
very like silly space. So I don't know how you would introduce guests, but I think there's a funny bit.
Last week, what was it that we did last week with Michael, where we just did the intro in the middle of the episode?
Maybe we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I flashed it in response to Michael's talking. Yeah, for sure.
We've also tried doing shock jock intros, early shock jock intro.
Yeah.
Welcome everybody to the Mind Sculptors. Mm-hmm.
So Lewis' suggestion was that we are welcoming and gay. So, hello, welcome to the Mind Sculptors. You're welcome here, and also we're gay.
I do think that's good. Okay.
Is that the cold open? Is that what you want, Cal?
Welcome, everybody, to the Mind Sculptors, where we are gay. And welcoming.
And we don't talk about anything else. There's not even a magic.
The only thing that we do. And, you know, it really I do like that because it does kind of play into the whole right wing, like, oh, the gay agenda, because, you know, we are sculpting minds here.
Mm-hmm. You have the gayest logo I've ever seen in my entire life. It's just
you saw my old logo, right? It was
no, this pretty, is gayer. It's a big GMS. It's pretty gay. But I love it.
You know, we do have the pride flag integrated into the logo. So,
what? I'm kidding.
So, yes, if you haven't noticed, we are joined by one of the most stardusty sculpty family members, which is one Lewis Stardust. How are you
that
today?
That was the pitch.
It's me. I'm Lewis Stardust. I'm one half of the Scry Babies, but I'm also sometimes a sculpty boy. And I was asked here today to hang out with two of my favorite people and talk about CDH and why it's so special and why more people should be playing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So before we get into that, I do want to share a story. Because last night I went to go see, I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. But I went to go see Macy Peters live in Columbus. It was a very, very talented young artist. She's kind of like if Taylor Swift grew up in England and was born in the year 2000.
Okay.
But so we're there, and we all know this. I'm turning 30 soon. I kid you not, we were the oldest people in the building by a lot. And I've never felt that age gap so significantly before in my entire life, where I was just like there were certain times where Macy Peters, who is, I think, 22, 23, mm-hmm, something mm-hmm. like that, would talk about the songs about growing up and in becoming an adult. And I just want, I'm standing there in the audience going, oh, honey.
There's still time.
Yeah.
It's
I've just been playing different Taylor Swift songs in my head, but in like a really aggressive Cockney accent ever since you made that comparison. So that's where my mind's been at. Yeah.
She's kind of like alt pop, like Taylor Swift. Sure. So yeah, it's, but highly recommend her. It was a good show.
Ian's been mind sculpted. Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Are you enjoying Taylor Swift these days?
We're getting 1989.
I know. Just announced last night.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Taylor Swift podcast now.
Ian looks so excited.
Taylor Mind Sculptor Swift.
Back to CEDH.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we all started playing CEDH at different times, I feel like.
I was going to say vastly different times, I think. Yeah.
I think Ian and I probably, like, I started playing around 2016. It was not too long after the Flash ban. Ian, you started playing, what was it?
Ravnica Allegiance. I think that's 2018.
Yeah. And then Lua, you started playing CEDH
right before I started playing Magic right before Kaldheim, and then summer I started dabbling with CEDH.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only been playing Magic for almost 3 years, like not that long. So
So we've all,
so mine's like tail end of 2018. I was just looking that up too, because Ravnica Allegiance was when I started getting like into it.
My introduction was the Commander 2016 decks. Because I will never forget, our local Walmart had them on clearance because they were the Japanese language copies.
Oh my god, now they're worth like $6 million.
I got like two of each of those decks for like 20 bucks a pop.
Crazy. Like, that's actually insane.
Yeah, it was like on like a lot of how I've gotten my like Mox Diamonds and Mana Crypts and like those expensive cards are off the back of C16 cards. So that's like my like when I started like playing it. Although I wasn't deeply embedded anywhere, it was mostly just like watching Lab Man videos. Which I feel like was what
I was watching Laboratory Maniacs like way before I actually ever played CEDH too, right? So I was like, I was one of the people who like now comment on my videos, right? But like they're like, I enjoy absorbing the content because it makes my casual decks better. It's like, great, cool. Yeah. Like, there's that bridge, you know?
I was watching Comedian MTG before I started playing CEDH. And now look at us. I hate him.
So, yeah, he's the fucking worst. Mm-hmm. So, let me ask this question. So I think an interesting like starting point for this is, what was it that caused us all to like pursue CEDH? Like, why CEDH? Because I think that's like a big part of why people should give it a chance. I think discussing a little bit of why we gave it a chance to begin with. Yeah. And I think Lua, you're being, you know, not the permanent, always here individual that you are. We let guests go first. I don't know how to say
that. Was the worst way to say
you could
guest.
Just say we
that
like was, the guest go first.
Well, I don't know how to say this is what's wild about being like,
Lua, sometimes and Lua, your reality is not one that you we exist could say, in, and now Lua, sometimes the reality that you're existing in currently is one where you are present, and I'm therefore
you say Lua,
see right now
the guest,
we're talking in the past.
Oh no.
But
I'm gonna turn my freaking camera off. I'm gonna leave.
So how was it that you like, what was it that really got you to pursue like getting into CEDH?
So I heard about it a lot at my LGS where people will be like playing for PAX essentially, right? Like we go to compete on Sunday and that was like the prize pool. And people will be like, I'm playing against CEDH. This is bullshit. But the decks were not CEDH. They were just like way higher powered.
usually is how that works.
Yeah. And so because I kept hearing about CDH, I like did my research on it and I was like, this actually seems really fun because like I like to play powerful cards and powerful spells. I want to play like the best decks and I want to play as fast as possible because I don't want to be in a 3-hour commander game. Like I want to try to, which recently there was a finals match that was 4 hours. So maybe that's not always the case with CDH, but I think it was a lot of the misconceptions of it being a turn one, turn two win game, which it can be sometimes if you're really, really lucky. But researching and looking into stuff, it made me realize that there's so much more to it. And that was where I got interested in playing.
Yeah. Ian, I know for you, like you said, you and I were both cut our teeth on Lab Maniacs videos. Mm-hmm. What was it that kind of got you to take that first step?
Yeah, so I always had like a casual appreciation for it, rather like it was never something I was active with. But I was always like, I've always been like the research type with Magic. So I was looking at new decks, looking at all those things. And like I was aware of what powerful decks were. And there was a guy at my local game store who basically had this like 95% Najeela deck, right? Like it was missing some of the pieces, but like it did the combo really quickly. It was able to execute its wins like at a very efficient rate, had all the tutors and stuff like that. And the only one who would ever like keep up with him was when I played this like I had a mono blue Naban, like the ETB doubler thing. And I had that deck and it would just like be able to counter a spell at the right time or like bounce a thing. And he was like, I was like, yeah, you play like really interactive games with me. He's like, you should actually like, I'm trying to make that step up to CEDH. Like, you should join us, right? And ironically, this was due to Brayden happening to be in my local scene at the time. So, you know, Brayden had been like profiting around Upper Massachusetts, being like, come play the glory of CEDH. And so there was another store near us who like people were starting to build like high power decks, right? And then the combination of the two kind of got me interested. And I was like, sure, like whatever, I'll build kind of a meme deck. And at the time, Brayden was not incurring a lot of favor from the people at my store. So I built Fibble Thip to basically like troll on the CEDH players at my store. And then I ended up just having a lot of fun with it. And like at the time, like as a casual player, I'm a very casual player. Like I like playing very stupid decks that do very dumb things. And like my whole point is usually never to actually try and win the game. It's usually to do something dumb, like draw my entire deck and die. Right. Like that's how I am playing casual Magic. And I was just like always getting so exhausted by these power level discrepancies that like by the time I started playing CEDH, I was like, oh, like I get to do the broken stuff. I get to do the cool stuff. I can still play stupid cards like fucking Fibble Thip and still like play at this higher power level. Right. Yeah. You know, maybe Fibble Thip's a little rotated out at this point, but the idea was still the same. And at the local store, it didn't matter quite as much. And I remember mulling to five and winning a game with like Urza and Thrasios and Timna and like just a bunch of good decks at the table. And I was like, I won with Fibble Thip. I'm the best player in the world. And like, that's my villain origin. But like, but no, like it was genuinely, it was a format that caught me really early on. And it wasn't like, I didn't have the classic, like, our decks kept ramping up in power level till we were playing CEDH. Like, it was like, no, someone was just like, hey, come play this thing. I think you're a good player. And I was like, okay. Yeah.
So that's, I unfortunately have kind of the more, I feel like the old boomer in this group, because basically, so how I got into it was, my roommate and I played Commander like every night with one of our best friends. We always had people over like every other night or every night or something like that. He had built Derevi. This was before C16 came out. So this is like, I think Kaladesh had just come out.
Oh, yeah, so like dramatic reversal is just the
kind of thing. And like, so he had Derevi, Tassiger, the Teferi Planeswalker Commander, like only played control decks. And I always wanted to play like the Typal, really high synergy decks, which if you've seen any of my casual decks, I love high synergy decks. And it just, I could never keep up with him. And then my other roommate, when Kaladesh came out, started playing Rashmi all the time. And so I was just kind of stuck between two control players. And so I was like, all right, fine. So I built Thrasios and Vile Smasher and then kind of started getting into doing that and playing that more. I eventually moved down to Athens, Ohio. And at that game store, they had like a commander night, and I would play Kess because Kess had just kind of came out, and I would get yelled at constantly for playing it because I would win kind of a lot because I would do the double Taint Impact thing. And people just like weren't super into it. And I was just like, oh, I mean, we're here, there's prizes. And I just like, that's like what we're here for. Right. And I had one guy throw like a deck box at me because it was just like we're here to have fun. We're not here to win. And I was like, okay, I am having fun and I am trying to have fun, but it's less fun when, you know, I'm getting yelled at.
I think that's of course, big misconception too, is that you can't have fun. Like, I guess when everybody at the table is there to like do the same thing, then it's more fun, right? But I think there's a misconception that CDH is just like not fun.
That was one of the things we'll get into, is like there's a lot of people, especially in that like comments on that Twitter thread that you did, that were talking about, oh, it's not very fun. And I'm like, have you really given it a try? Because it's a lot more fun than I think you think it is. But so I did that. And then when I moved to Lincoln, I immediately got involved in their commander scene. And that's when I met Phoenix. And Phoenix was, if I'm a Magic boomer, he is a greatest generation Magic player. So like he and I got really close. And so from there, it was just, you know, here we are now. So that's kind of my villain backstory, was my roommate played too much Derevi and Tasigur, and now I play Tivit. So
I do think there's like an interesting conversation kind of going off what you're saying, though, that like I feel like casual is a really fun deck building format, whereas I feel like CEDH is like much more entertaining to play. Like I think that like there's like this mission when you're playing casual games, you're like, oh yeah, I'm like I'm doing the thing. But like sometimes people would be like, I play a squirrel deck, and you're like, yeah, cool, like the squirrel deck's very cool, and then like they don't actually do anything, or they win with a combo that has nothing to do with squirrels. And it's like,
yeah,
that's I feel like how a lot of casual games I see like go, is like people get really excited about the deck, and either A, the deck is very generic and just kind of like a bad CEDH deck, or it's a really cool, interesting deck, but then doesn't actually get to execute what they're trying to do with their game plan. And even if they do, it's still like, okay, everyone was there for 3 hours so that they could lose to a squirrel combo. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not saying all casual games are not fun. Like, I have a ton of fun playing with casual Magic, and I do also really enjoy doing it with friends, which I think is kind of really important for regular Commander.
Well, I think that's why a lot of casual players have a hard time wanting to play it, because they want the ability to build a thing that's their baby, their signature deck, their thing. And that's not to say that, like, you know, I stand by going by Ian's Winota list, but changing out like five cards because I want it to be my deck, right? And they're not always like the best choices, but they're things that I feel more comfortable playing, and they're cards that win me games that, because I feel like I'm playing them better, right? So I think there is like, you can switch a couple cards. Is it the most optimized thing to do it? Maybe not, but I think that's why a lot of players have a hard time wanting to transition over to like playing CDH.
I also think there's a sentiment about like what's optimized for one player is not optimized for another, right? Like we talked about before, we're talking about like Sylvan Library and how you hated resolving that card, right? And I was like, yeah, just don't play it for this tournament. Like, you haven't had enough time to practice with it. Like, if you're going to not feel comfortable with it, like, don't fucking play it, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that is, I think it's a super valid competitive choice.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, the card's fine. The card's good. It just puts, like, pressure on my life total when I don't want to have to be that person that has pressure on the life total, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've literally had this conversation about that card, like, 4 or 5 times during coaching with multiple people, like, not just with you. Like, it's, like, a thing.
And, like, I mean, there are cards, Ian and I have talked about this before, where like for a long time in my stacks decks, for instance, people would be like, why aren't you playing rule of laws? And I'm like, I don't like playing rule of laws. Like, it's just straight up, I don't like playing under rule of law, so I'm not going to play it, because I play like a complete idiot when I have a rule of law out. So it's like, I just, and the other thing is too, is I think there's a misconception about what CEDH is in general. Because I think a lot of people think it's like just a bunch of Rog'Sai decks. And
Not really helping with that. Like, we're not really helping with that.
I mean, I disagree. We have Tyam winning multiple tournaments in a row. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've got a lot of a variety in it.
I would argue the audience and or the hosts of this cast actually do help a lot with the narrative of
I think you do. Yeah, but I'm saying that I don't think that's always the same. Like, look at when we go to an event and there's like six people playing the same thing. It's like a cult, right? It becomes this like little cult mentality of like, this is the best deck we know.
Cabal.
Oh no. I don't know what that is. What is that?
But no, I mean, so like there's always gonna be problem is there's a major divide in the format and the mentality talking about the format right now. And I think this is where so we got really, really lucky in that we had flash ban and then the return to humanity, basically,
right,
were really good for CEDH in general, right? Because people started to go, okay, actually they don't like cards like flash because they're fucking toxic and a lot, right? And no one likes playing those same patterns over and over again. No one likes losing on turn one, turn zero. No one's happy about that situation, right? And I think that put a spotlight on CEDH that wasn't there before. Then we had post or like mid to post COVID, right? Or post lockdown per se, right? We're still technically in COVID, but that that reality allowed people to be inside playing a lot of Commander a lot more, right? Which meant that Commander got a huge focus. And with that also CEDH grew, because if Commander is getting so much focus, there's going to be people who stumble into the higher power thing more often, right? Like enough play groups are going to accelerate when you give them enough time to do so. And guess what? People had a lot of time during lockdown to accidentally start playing CEDH, right? And so like all of these things combined led to a really positive narrative for the format, because then we had an event like MC Vegas, or I guess it was not MC at the time, but it was GP or Magic Fest Vegas.
Yeah,
in 19 where or 2020, I guess, whenever the hell it was. But we had Vegas where a bunch of people from CEDH came out. They were really solid arbiters for the format. They left a really positive presence. And like all of the people in the casual space I heard were like, oh, yeah, the CEDH players came out and they were all really cool. And then that kept happening. And the format actually started to look good, which was really nice. But then there came the counter movement, which was, OK, but now the tournament scene's picking up a little bit, which means that there are going to be the grinders, right? And sometimes there are people having mixed narratives, right? There are some people who are talking about what I want to see at a tournament, and there are people who are talking about CEDH as a thing in general, right? And there are some people who have a really hard time differentiating those things, right? And I've noticed that happens all the time, especially with people who I like as someone who specializes in tournaments, I still have those dialogues all the time where I'm like, you're not talking about the same thing I'm talking about. I have coaching sessions where I'm telling somebody how to play at their local store that I would never tell them advice for in the general scene, right? But like, I am able to differentiate those and actually help the people I work with.
I would even argue or like say that we see that at tournaments a lot too. It's the
Yeah.
100%. Sure. I mean, we talked about this last week with Michael where, when you're at like a tournament and you kind of can just get buried at like the bottom table, and if you lose and then you just kind of get buried, and that's kind of how that you see that mentality a lot in the difference between like the top tables and the bottom tables at those tournaments.
Like even the example I have, the guy at Baltimore who like was gonna fetch or he's gonna wish claw into an opposition agent because he was like, oh well, this guy went last and he mulled to four, so I might as well give him the game. And I was like, this is a tournament with thousands of dollars on the lines. What did you just say out loud? Like,
yeah,
like that difference in that mentality right there was like super indicative of that too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So a couple things I wanted to do too here is there were some people, because your initial thread started with you asking a question
Yeah, I said casual players, what's stopping you from trying CDH? And I thought maybe like 100 people would see it and respond. And there's 538 responses on this thread.
I did not know it got worse.
171,000 views.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like. I knew it was gonna start conversation. I didn't think it was gonna be like that.
No. you knew it would start conversation, not controversy.
Yeah.
One of the responses I thought that was very interesting was Brian Kibler gave a response where he basically said that the politics are part of what invalidates CEDH as a competitive format. In my mind, I don't want to be completely invested in a game that I can lose because someone convinced one of my other opponents to do something bad for me or makes a mistake in another opponent's favor.
So this is the conversation of, and I've heard this with so many 60 card grinders who are like convert over to CEDH. And there's some people who get it right. Like Koval, yeah, who like gets this right away, but it's like, if you're going to treat the features like a bug, then you're never going to like this format. Right. Yep. But to me, that is a feature of the format, right? Like the political aspect of CEDH is a feature of the format. The fact that someone can come with the best deck at the table and still not win a game because the other three players, yep, banded together because their decks weren't firing and were not like, you can have the best cards from your deck because variance went your way and you can still lose that game because the other players can work together.
I think you can also like rely on other players in that way. And sometimes it sucks when you're like, okay, I really need you to have this counter spell. But I think it's also like you can benefit so much from having two additional players, either stopping somebody, but also maybe they give you resources or things that matter. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think Steve actually did a kind of good thread about it where he compared it to Survivor, which I think it's very much like Survivor with the social aspects. Right. But
excuse
I think,
you.
Like, that is part of the appeal.
That's my thing.
It's our thing too. We just put out merch the other day.
To be fair, no. Cal has been saying this for a year and a half, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Like, I have been saying this for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Well, then you guys go get along.
Getting so much shit about it.
But I think it is true, right? Like, it's very much this social aspect that is why we love Commander already, right? We love Commander because it's a very social aspect. There's politics, it's fun. And the one thing I always say with CDH is like, I play CDH to win and have fun, and then I play casual to have fun, and then like if I win, cool, right? So I don't, there's some times where I'm not having the most fun because I might be a little tilted, which is very rare in a match, I will say. Ian's laughing because I get tilted with him all the time. That's different. But but I'm not like, if I went and the games made me so miserable, then I just wouldn't play that anymore.
Yeah.
Period. Exactly. Like, it just wouldn't spend my time, my money, my resources to do a thing if it was that miserable.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is like when people who are like, oh yeah, like the whole like, I want to play to have fun thing. And it's like, I have a record of me playing drunk. Like that is not like a, like I recorded, like I'm saying I know for a fact I have like a near 100% win rate while completely drunk out of my mind. And it's like, if this was not a fun format, I don't think I would be playing this format absolutely smashed with my friends at 2 a.m, right? Like, it's like we do this thing to have fun with it. And it's like, it's like little things like that exist out of it. Because like, I hear like all the time, they're like, this is probably like an older mentality with it, but like, people used to be like, oh, well, I just want to be able to like crack open a beer and have a good time with my friends. And I was like, you can't, like, there's nothing stopping that from being a CEDH environment at all.
I think that's the same kind of people that, again, say it's a turn one or turn two format, or it's just Thassa's Oracle, which is like, listen, I'll fist fight Thassa's Oracle all day. That's my brand. But like, it's a viable win con. I'm never going to shit on somebody for playing it. There's also
me
fist
fighting Rock'Sai players.
Yeah.
I literally, like, look at my tournament record. Like, there's a few wins with Thassa's Oracle in that entire thing. And I'm aware I'm like the exception to certain rules, right? But like, I have been playing this format for a really long time and doing successful runs and tournaments for a long time without playing the Oracle console a lot of the time. Like, I have like the highest. Like, my decks that don't have black in them are like some of the best non-black performing decks in the format. And it's because like the format's open. Like, you can still do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And if it was just like play Thassa's Oracle or lose, like, I wouldn't be doing this.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The fact that I can show up to a tournament with Arden Silas or Arden Crom and be competitive and be like in like the running for top 16, you can come, you can show up with a lot of stuff. Like there is, this is something I've said for a long time. There's so much unexplored space in CEDH. It's insane. We have no idea what this format can do. Whenever somebody on Twitter tries to say, Drake Sasser says this, and it always drives me nuts. He's like, "Oh, we've almost solved CEDH," and I'm like, "You aren't even close to cracking the tip of the iceberg because you have looked at four decks. You haven't explored every option."
Drake also loves throwing hot takes out there.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure.
We just saw all the Magic product come until 2025. Like, there's so much stuff that's gonna happen. We're never gonna solve this, right?
No.
There's gonna be a hot streak for a while where we're like, this is the best, like Blue Farm for a while. Everyone was like, Blue Farm is the best, there's nothing else. Right now it's like the Rock Side hype, like, then it's Marty Summer. Then it's all these things that like will be the top thing for a while that gets talked about a lot, but it doesn't mean that things aren't gonna change. I think there's like room for the slicers of the world that come show up. Mess things up, make it really fun, and then people want to talk about it, right? But I think it's fun that there's those underdog decks or random decks and exceptional pilots that play them, and that we're not only in a meta which is just Blue Farm or just Rock'Side. Like, even if we're seeing a lot of it, there are other things. And if it was just that, I would be bored. People ask all the time, they'll be like, what are the best CDH decks? And I'm like, these perform well, but like, are they the best?
Yeah.
I don't even know that they perform well. They just are played a lot. And so by default end up getting a lot of results because they're played a lot. But I mean,
that's the argument for a different conversation, I think.
Yeah. But like one thing, going back to your point on Survivor that I think is very important. And this is one of the things that I think is, I laugh at me only one, I don't care. Bryant Cook can make fun of me for making the Survivor comparison, but whatever. The reality of it is let's look at Survivor as an example for this. There have been pro athletes that go on to Survivor and lose. They get
absolutely boned, because they're threatening.
Yeah, like the people, like this is one of the things that I always try to explain, and this is why I like the Survivor metaphor so much, is who are the good Survivor players? The people, like, think about who won, what was it? Was it 40, the last season or the season before, where the whole season she just kind of sat in the back, didn't really talk a whole lot, kind of just would integrate a little bit with everybody, and then made one big move right at the end that got everybody, and then she won the whole thing. Like, that is almost exactly the best way of winning in CEDH to a T, is to not draw a lot of attention to yourself, not like be quiet, and then make a big move and take advantage of it when you see your window. And it's like, makes it
really hard when your face is publicly pasted everywhere talking about how well you've done, because then every single game is an arch enemy game.
It is true.
Yeah.
That's why I play bad.
Yeah, I just play like shit so that nobody wants to deal with me. So
I'm gonna play bad until that one time I play good. They'll never see it coming.
So let's go through if people want to play CEDH part of it, and we've given them some thoughts, like what are some of the, like, we have this Twitter thread here But one of the first things that Lua brings up is the money aspect of CEDH, because like it can be very expensive. Like I said, like I bought a Mox Diamond because I was fortunate enough to get really good deals on C16. Not everybody's going to get that. So like what, go through that for me for a little bit.
Yeah. There's a lot of important ports like on this thread, I think, but financial stuff is like a big thing. One, we are so proxy friendly. Your LGS might not be online. We are very proxy friendly. A lot of tournaments have been relatively proxy friendly. They sometimes have playtest cards as well, if you cannot export, like afford the expensive reserve list cards or other stuff. So there is a lot of resources in that way. One thing I always recommend to people too is if you're not sure you want to spend your dollars on a deck, Moxfield has the playtest feature that you can do on your PC where you can try out a deck and see if you like it. I use that a lot to playtest hands. I'm sure Ian has talked about that a lot as well, but it is a really good resource to see if you like a deck without spending the money on buying a paper deck in general. I think it's like some people really have the, what's the word you would say? They don't have the desire to play proxy. They want it to be like 100% real. And I get that.
No, I mean, like I'm very much that way. Like I like to own the cards. And so, I understand that sentiment, but like, one thing I think is very important to point out is there is so much, there's also just a lot of budget resources out there anyway. Like there, one thing that I think is a resource that doesn't get talked about enough is, to me, T1000's, like Budget Brews website. Like that is a very, very good resource for the community because it shows you, hey, here are some, like he has a whole thing on Moxfield. Here's budget options for mana bases, budget options for interaction suites, all of these different things. And I think those are important, especially when you have people like SCG who are coming in and they're like, no proxy. And it's like, okay, sure, whatever.
Which we saw like such a difference in decks when there was no proxies, I think. At least I did. I don't know if you've been in that kind of experience, Ian, but like to see, well, for people that could not afford like specific mana rocks and lands, seeing what they switched out for them was really interesting to me.
I think I maybe was because I got in the top pods pretty early for SCG Baltimore. I didn't see a lot of that. I went undefeated into the thing, right?
But yeah, it was interesting to see like what people chose, and some of them were random things I'd never really heard of or like didn't see play a lot. And some of them made a lot of sense too. I think that's fun.
I think it's definitely a thing. Like it's been a thing since the age of time. Like people are going to play CEDH decks that they have in paper, right? And as you mentioned, like the local game stores or SCGs and stuff like that are gonna be those non-proxy spaces. But like if we look at the history of this format right now, like SCG is just dipping their toes in, and I would not consider that like the premier place to play CEDH right now. And like that's like if you want to play it, like I mean, Eminence is doing an amazing job at putting on really good professional tournaments, Mox Masters and Chaos, all online, completely proxy friendly. There's literally no reason to like worry about these budgets in your deck. And like if you're worried about playing cards that don't feel like cards, like if you're not like me and you're not fine just printing off a piece of paper and slapping it on a piece of cardboard, go to a print website. You spend $50 to test a $10,000 deck or whatever, and then you'll know. And you can you don't have to own any a single piece of these cards, right? And you can play in a tournament with this $50 stack, right? Like it's the price of a popper deck, basically, to print off a proxy thing from a good proxy site, right? And it's and then you can take it to any tournament forever and buy real cards. Like you can buy a real Dispel or like whatever, like the things that are like 50 cents, and it's not going to break the bank for you.
Right.
I think with that too, there is, oh my god, you made me lose my train of thought. I had one. It was there. The dog. Fuck. So the thing with Magic in Commander in general, it's 100 cards, right? So like if you eventually save up and you're like, I'm gonna buy this Mox Diamond, this Mana Crypt, this thing, you can like still have multiple CDH decks and rotate out your like expensive cards and use them. It's not like you're playing Legacy or something where you have to have like multiples of a very expensive card. So I think that's really nice too. Also kind of related, but not related. Ian and I are going to be at MagicCon Vegas, and I'm trying to set up a day, probably Friday. We'll post about it closer. where we're going to have a bunch of decks and like proxy decks and stuff for people to come learn how to play CDH, or if there's like a deck they want to try out, will be us and other content creators kind of set up. So if this is something that's interesting to you and you don't have the funds, or you're not sure what you want to play, we'll have like anywhere from like 10 to 15 decks to like try out for the weekend and see if it's for you. So just throwing that out there.
Which is, I mean, so like this is, I mean, really like, I can't push this notion enough, and we'll probably advertise it more as time goes on. But like Lua pitched this idea, a lot of people in the community have gotten really behind it. And it's like, it's the most free opportunity if you're going to go to this event to like get to dip your toes in the format. And also like a bunch of content creators are volunteering their time to like sit down and play games with people for like no charge, and also teach you for free. So like, it seems like a pretty good thing. And like, seriously, props for Lua, but throwing it together, like,
I don't want to take full credit because I know Josh from Elden Dragon Highlander has been doing it for a while, but getting to like make it bigger and have more content creators and like a space to learn,
right? That was you.
I know. I'm trying really hard. I want it to be welcoming because I think this format is very welcoming, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions that it's not.
That was another thing that you talked about on that thread. Was one of the concerns some people had was gatekeeping, and that you have to know your deck well enough. And that, in to be completely fair, we have talked about on this channel very like often when we were talking about like art, doing our tier lists or talking about like our power rankings and going to a tournament, like, hey, you probably want to know your deck if or specific decks. But I mean, like, that is not us saying don't try these things, you know what I mean? Like, we're talking purely if you're wanting to go and perform and do well in an event, right? Like, that's very different.
I think there's like, I don't want to tell you how to play your deck. It's not my job to. If we're playing for money, we're playing for prizing, I'm not telling you how to play your deck. That's your own job. But I don't think you have to play like the meta list, the things that are on the database. Like, I think you can play things that speak to you, but you need to know, one, what kind of like things you should be looking out for when cons, combos, etc. You need to make sure your deck is at least going to keep up with the table, because when your deck is like unable to keep the table, that's one person that's basically sitting out while the three of us have to like fight for our lives, right? But I've only had like maybe one or two instances where somebody was like rather rude to me at a table. And I've been playing, like I said, for 2 years, and I know that's maybe a little bit biased or like privileged to say, but I would argue that like most of the time it's very welcoming, and like usually after the game's finished, we talk a little bit about the game and what happened during it too, and I think that's really nice. And there's a lot of online resources. Like, I know that we have a Discord. I believe you have a Discord where like game nights happen, right? So there's definitely a lot of opportunities to play these decks beforehand in spaces that are welcoming, where I know that you and I are very like inclusive in our spaces, and we want to make sure it's like a safe place to safe place to play.
Just so a safe place in general. You know, like, that's kind of like my whole thing with it in general. And that's one of the other things too, not to interrupt you, but in general, I found CEDH to be probably one of the most like affirming communities in the game, like as far as like gender, sexuality, those sorts of things.
It's
like,
it's the most woke Magic community,
like, it really is like the most woke Magic community by like a lot.
Like, I don't know what the sort of crossover is between queer people and CEDH, but for some reason,
but it seems to be a circle. It is astonishing how many people are queer and play CEDH. It's almost like we were all outcasts for a little while.
Good band.
With that thread, so we talked about gatekeeping, we talked about the money aspect, we talked about people just thinking the game is not fun, which is crazy to me, because we still politic, we have socialization, and we enjoy the game the same way. The one thing I didn't talk about was just the people that were like, it's not for me, or I don't care for this, which is fine. It does not have to be for you if it doesn't like want you to be. But a lot of people were saying they felt dumb. That made me so sad. They didn't feel like they were smart enough to like learn a deck or understand the format.
Hey guys, let me, to the people who say that you're dumb, let me just clue you in. and Ian can confirm this. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm not smart. I am passively smart at best, and I'm okay. Like, it's you don't need to be Oppenheimer to play freaking CEDH. Like, it's
no, I mean, the fact that I'm good at this format should tell you all you need to know.
I know, look at him. Smart.
Yeah, look at that dumb guy. Look at that idiot.
Well, there's so many resources for education already. There was I think Spike Fears for a while was doing Better Know a Combo. A lot of people were doing things like, here's a specific combo. Learn about this. Now you know, right? And for a while, I was like, which card goes first in Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation? I had to ask Ian for the first time I resolved one. Because I was like, I don't understand, right? So I can understand feeling dumb. I'm not good at math. I don't know why I picked this game. I'm not good at math. I barely can read my cards, right? And I wasn't.
That's why you play Kinnan, right? Is because you're bad at math.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I think one of the things that has come up besides mulligans being the hardest is knowing when to interact, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the thing where I think you can rely on your partners at the table or the players at your table, which sometimes it's not the best, but asking people if they have interaction, if this is a good time to interact, having those conversations doesn't have to entirely be in your own head when somebody else can be this is a thing.
And that's the thing is table talk is a real thing in multiplayer. And one of the things that you're not going to get in, a 1v1 environment is that table talk. And you can't talk to other people because it's outside help. Whereas in CEDH, there's two other people who, if that spell resolves, are going to die. So if you have a piece of interaction, they're probably going to give you some sort of inclination as to whether or not this is a proper time to get involved. Generally feels table talk is part of the game and is encouraged. And I think that getting good at knowing how that works, I think, is one of the most rewarding parts about the game too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very
completely agree. I think it's a format that has had years and years of misconceptions, and it's so easy nowadays to look at it and be like, man, it's so much better than it was.
It really is.
The amount of bullshit that people used to say about CEDH that was just not even close to true. It was insane, and things have gotten insanely better, but I appreciated this thread because it reminded me that for all the work that we've done, we still have a ways to go.
Yeah.
Once again, it still is nice to be able to, and I remember actually it's funny when Lou first started publicly championing playing CEDH, I remember you were so frustrated about the state of things at one point, and you were I don't get why people believe this stuff. And I was oh my God, it's gotten so much better. You have no idea. It's they used to be fucking awful.
Listen. I remember the days where I was publicly accosted for it because it was just it was looked down on so heavily in the community that if you even went near it, you would get a deck box thrown at you. And it has evolved so much from there, where it has become part of the Magic landscape to the point where Wizards is aware and is also considering it when they do things. That is
IACEDH specific creator and ambassador for Wizards at the current moment. That is miles different than any other scenario than has
like 2 years ago that wouldn't have been a thing.
If you told me Wizards would be working with me directly, I would actually laugh out loud at you in the past, right? So we made progress, as I said, still a while to go, but I think there are so many resources out there, and I think there it helps having people like you, Lua, having people who are approachable, people like the Jank Lords, playing CEDH in the public space, who are they're the definition of people who are just there for the enjoyment of the game, right? Yeah. And people who genuinely love this game and who are not the same cookie cutter people you see all the time who you would define CEDH people. When I met Sinestra for the first time, I was like, you are exactly how I think a CEDH player, if someone were to write down I think you are, I was like, that's exactly who you are. And I was like, but I've also met people who are like, oh, I would never assume that that's their main way of playing this game. And that's good. We want more diversity. We want more people. We want more people who are doing who don't look the same and talk the same and act the same. We want different opinions. We want people to come play Magic. And I know it's been a problem with Magic in general. And the more people this can reach, the more audience comes into the game, the less we stop, or the less we gatekeep each other from enjoying a card game. the better it is, right?
It's the most fun I have playing Magic, like hands down. I just don't get the anger behind it. I guess, like, I get if you're at your LGS and you're playing like some lower power decks and some asshole comes with like a CDH deck and like pup stomps you, I can understand that. But that the ratio of that is so low in comparison to
that doesn't really happen.
What happens?
And when you think it happens, it's really not a CEDH deck, because I can tell you that CEDH players do not actively seek out opportunities to pup stomp.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that.
No, it's awful. Yeah. Like, I actively avoid that scenario more than anything.
Yeah.
I don't like a game feeling free, right? I don't like feeling like, I like the challenge. I like the puzzle. I like the resources. I like building the thing. Oh, yeah. But I don't like to feel like, I don't like to sit at a table where one person does everything. Nobody can take game actions. That sucks.
Yeah.
Ian, the freaking Mox Masters, where I was up all night watching you and I was like, all right, he's in the top four. This is gonna be a great game. I got into my bed, I turned on TV, I had a little snack. And it was like,
and we lost on turn two on the play. Yeah,
it was like 5 minutes, and I was like, "This doesn't happen." Like, I was like ready to go. But the number of that happening is like so low. Like, even we recently filmed some episodes, and we did a game in like 15 minutes, and I was like, "We have to record another one because that was like the fastest game that we've had on here." But even then, those are like lower chances. Not to say they don't happen, but I still think it's fun.
Yeah,
but not when it's too fast and there's nothing happening. Yeah, I want to have fun too.
Yeah, I very much understand that. And I mean, and that's why you always see me out here. I think Tivit is the first time I think I've ever played what I consider to be the best deck in the format, like hands down. Like, I just don't think I've ever.
It's also fun.
Like, well, it Tivit happens to be the weird cross section of is really good and also happens to be exactly my type of bullshit.
So, I literally was like, the first time I played Tivit at a tournament, it was because I couldn't find the pieces to play Marnia. So I was like, oh, I'll try Tivit instead. I kind of wanted to test that one. And now it's one of the best decks in the format.
But it's
so, like,
big cat. It has ward. It's stupid.
It's so dumb. And it's.
Yeah,
and it wins on like such a fun angle, and
I owe the Rise of Tivit to Omar from my old LGS, because they're just playing it, and I was like, huh, that card's a pain in the ass for me to kill right now. And they were like, yeah, you should try it. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. So I really appreciate, Lua, the work that you have done to get the community like, get some good press for the community, because the community has been kind of, I feel like, since Jim stopped being as involved in CEDH and when the Lab Maniacs kind of fell off, it is the format has kind of needed a champion that is a big name, and it's great to have you be our champion, because not gonna lie, you do a lot of good press.
I might not know everything about every deck. I might be a little slower to learn, which is just my disability, sorry. Like, it's fine. But I will be the heart and soul of Commander if I can. Like, I just want to show people how fun this is. I want them to feel safe in the spaces. I want them to like experience this, because for me, it's been the most, again, fun I've had, the most joy I've had playing Magic in general has been through CDH, been the people that I've met. You know, the meetup that we did wasn't in Vegas, no, it was in Minneapolis, like, where there was a bunch of CDH players. Like, that was very wholesome for me. So having things like that is so special. Having people come up to me and be like, I started CDH because of you. I'm like, I'm literally a scrub in this format. But that's super cool that I can help people feel like that. And I think that you guys do that too. I know that, obviously, Play to Win, Playing Power, like, people are really becoming so personal that are making people want to try this, and that's all I want to do, period. I want help.
I feel that, and I'm very glad that we have you around for doing that. And I'm glad to call you a friend, because I like having good people as friends, so, you know,
I like playing Magic. and your friendship.
In that order. So Lua, for people who want to find you and want to follow the content that you do, follow you on Twitter, all that stuff, how can or X, whatever the fuck it's called, how how can people find you, and where are you going to be here over the next month or two?
Oh God, a lot. So my name is Lua Stardust. You can find me and all of my information at luastardust.com. I am one half of the fantastic Magic the Gathering game show called Scrybabies, which Callahan actually edits, and it's really fun that we're doing this today. Yeah. We do CDH and regular Commander on our channel, but we're also launching something really soon where you can see more of our 60 card, more of our constructed formats and things like that. I will be at a lot of events. I'll be at Vegas, like I said, doing some CDH stuff. We're going to the Festival of the Nights thing. We're doing a lot of stuff, honestly. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even name it off if I wanted to.
Yeah, you guys are like constantly busy.
We're
like, it's actually nuts.
Till like the end of October between like regular Comic Cons and Magic events. So we post those on Twitter. If you want to see us at events, come say hi. I usually have some Scrybabies merch with me, or stickers and things to pass out. And I would love to play Magic with you.
Yeah. Awesome.
I also work on the Scrybabies sometimes.
You do, yeah, you do. He's Ian is the on-set judge, set coordinator, everything.
Ian does what I would do if I lived in Philadelphia and could do it for you. But unfortunately, we are separated by quite a lot of mileage and farmland. So,
thank you for having me, though. I love talking to you about this kind of stuff.
Thanks for coming on. I always love having you on. This is what, your second time on the show? Question mark. Okay.
Yeah. This is also like the most cohesive episode we might have ever had, and it's really disconcerting.
Can I ask?
This
a
might
question?
Be the most cohesive episode we've had since like Cobblepot's been on.
Yeah.
Like, can I ask a closing question?
Of course.
If you can give like one piece of advice to somebody who wanted to start CDH, what would it be?
Don't play Lavinia.
It's even funnier because that is the advice you gave me starting this format. That is actually, I don't know if we've ever talked about this in the podcast.
Yeah.
I started with Lavinia as one of my main decks, and I was like, hey, there's all these Najeelas in my pod. What do you do? And it was either you or Phoenix, and I can't remember which one of you it was, but you guys both said, don't play Lavinia. And I sat there with my deck that I had just bought going, what?
This was before we even were making content. This was like years ago when we were just only running the Lavinia Discord. Yeah, and like we would have people hop in and be like, hey, this is our first deck, and we were like, oh buddy.
Ian, what's yours?
Mine is always so I'm a brewer at heart, right? Like I gotta start with this so people understand my context. Play some notable decks first, or at least watch good people play some notable decks first. So like pick up your Blue Farms, pick up your Dawnmaker Thrasios's, right? Like play the good decks for a minute and get the context of the format. Or even if you're playing Godo, right? Like at least be there so you can passively understand what's happening around you, right? Get the context of the format. And then when you understand what makes CDH work, brew. It's such an amazing brewer's format. Like I have 600 decks in Moxfield right now. I am constantly making decks for this format. It's so much fun, but I also have context of what's happening, what makes certain cards good, what makes them playable when you combine cards together, right? So as soon as you get that context, it can feel like CDH, I don't even understand how to brew this format, or like, this wins at my local store all the time. It has to be CDH. You can get rid of that mentality in like a month and actually get the context and be like, oh my God, this is so fun to brew in this space, right? And it's so easy to do, but just get a little bit of that context first so that you know what direction to follow.
I think that's really good. I'd piggyback off that, bringing it back to using Moxfield's playtest feature, which is super, super fun. Yeah. CDH Guide is a great resource. And there's also, I have like a link somewhere where it's like a bunch of CDH channels that you can check out and find information. But yeah, definitely do your research. Definitely try some playtesting. And if you feel like you're in a space that is not as welcoming to you in this format, or you're sitting at a table and the people aren't as welcoming, then you can find another space. I promise you. I know that sounds harsh, I know no, that feels like a lot.
100%.
But yeah, don't let one shitty sour pickle like ruin the rest of your play experience, because it has been some of the most like beautiful, fun, memorable Magic I've ever played. And I'm going to throw something at Ian in a second.
It's okay. But yesterday, Ian was making this like really good, like very poignant point. And I'm over here just like,
yeah, you fucking eating your cards like a sociopath.
It's okay. That is part of, listen.
He's so hard.
Welcome everybody to the Mind Sculptors podcast. I'm your host, Callahan.
Take one card like I was giving and you threw the whole post-it thing at me.
With that, I'm Callahan. We'll see you next week.
Get mind sculpted.
That I'm trying to keep, yeah. All these memories bittersweet, yeah. Gotta move, can't stay here no more. 여기 계속 있다가 남아서 내가 돼. 'Cause we can't keep making these rain clouds stay overhead. Don't wanna keep this going. Can't fix what's already broken. 생각을 돌이켜봐도 혼자 되네.